Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Table Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
Mary Borks was born in the small town of Bishop, California, and raised in Sacramento. After college, she lived and worked in Iowa and upstate New York before moving to Kodiak as a newlywed for a 2-year adventure. 25 years, 3 kids, and many pets later, Kodiak is truly home.
Well, hi everybody. My family loves to tell me that I was a really weird kid. And when I was a young child, my sister accused me of being possessed. She's 7 years older than I am, and I have a brother who's 5 years older. When I was 3 and a half, my mom had another baby. And in this no man's land of being too young to play with my older siblings and too young and not at all interested in that baby, I filled the void with my two imaginary friends, Pesty and Lettuce. Lettuce was a boy, and he was perfectly well-behaved, but Pesty, she lived up to her name, and she got me into all kinds of trouble. So after a few months of Pesty running amok in our family, my parents summoned my aunt and uncle from Stockton to come and visit us and take Pesty away to go live with them. So we all stood out in the driveway and went, "Bye, Pesty! See you next time when you're going to go visit Aunt Virginia Clarence in Stockton." Well, the next day, I was in my room by myself having a full-on conversation. And my mom and my sister came in and said, "Who are you talking to?" And I said, "Pesty." And my mom said, "But we sent her to live with Aunt Virginia and Clarence." And I said, "Well, she didn't like it in Stockton, so she took a plane and flew home." And that's when my sister said, "I think she's possessed." So I outgrew my imaginary friends, and when I was 12, I developed ESP, extrasensory perception. So the first time it happened, I was 12, and we used to go to Lake Tahoe for 2 weeks every summer to the same cabin, and I played the piano, and I had a dream that there was a piano up at the cabin for the first time ever. And my sister went up the day ahead, and she called that night and said, "Tell Mary to bring her music. There's a piano at the cabin." And I thought, ooh, Twilight Zone, and I have ESP. So the next time it happened, a couple months later, wasn't quite so benign. I was in seventh grade now, doing a unit on gymnastics in the gym, and I had a dream that I was doing a jump on the vault, and I fell off, and well, you can guess where this is heading. So I did indeed fall off the vault, and I ended up with a compound fracture in my left wrist, and to this day, my mother says that I did it on purpose, but it was way too scary having ESP, so I decided I'm not going to have ESP anymore. So I didn't have ESP anymore, but I did continue to have many crazy, wild, vivid dreams that would wake me up, and I would think, "What does that dream mean? These are crazy dreams." So after I graduated from college, I went and moved to Iowa. I had never been east of Nevada before, so this is a big adventure, moving to a new part of the country and working. And I was thumbing through the University of Iowa's continuing education catalog, and there was a class that said how to interpret dreams. And I thought, ooh, this is the class for me. I'm going to take this class. So I signed up and thought I was taking a university psychology class. And my first clue that it wasn't a university class was when I went to the address, which was a woman's home. And the second clue was the sign that said fortune teller about her door. So I went in, and there were maybe 10 or 12 other people. And this woman thought that all dreams were an attempt from the other side to communicate with loved ones still among the living. So within a few minutes, she was saying, "Do you people want to have a seance?" And all these people in the class are saying, "Yes, yes, we want to have a seance." And I'm thinking, no, we don't want to have a seance. I was afraid to touch a Ouija board and never would look in the mirror at night. I didn't have a seance, but I didn't really know how to get out of it. So the next thing I know, I'm sitting on the floor, and I'm holding hands with my neighbors, and I'm concentrating because we're trying to summon the people from the beyond, and I'm concentrating on trying not to giggle, and I'm peeking around at me, and I'm trying to see the spirits that were supposedly flying through the air, and the whole time I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing this. This is ridiculous. So the seance ended, and I was walking home, and I'm walking home through a baseball field in Iowa in June at dusk, and it's getting dark, and I felt this presence over here, and I look, and there's nothing there, and then there's this presence over there, and I look, and there's nothing there, and I stop, and I'm thinking, what's going on? And I see another presence over there, and then flash over there, and I'm standing and thinking, oh my God, it's the spirits and the seance following me because they're so mad that I didn't take it seriously. What am I going to do? And I was just petrified, and it's getting dark, and I'm standing there, and there's more and more of these flashing lights, and I finally realized, oh my God, I'm east of the Rocky Mountains, and I'm seeing fireflies.
Enjoying a Guinness, we chat. That one, good. And I'm going by and car kind of waves. I don't know who it is. They turn around, come back, park, get out. Someone who's been out of the set that site, haven't seen him in a while. Hugs, laughter, tears. It's good. So I make it. I get in here, and it's a great show. Lots of belly laughs, lots of... I just love the Fisher puppets. You know, they got fishing down, and they play with words. It's really great. But it went kind of longer than I thought. 10:30. September darkness always surprises me. It's like, what? But, you know, I'm off and walk home. There's a lot of drunks, maybe. Rowdy, happy people. Downtown Kodiak, Friday night, 10:30. I'm not there a lot, but I noticed that this night. So I just keep walking. I'm going to walk fast. I'm going to walk strong. But there's some dark stretches on Mission Road. There are some lights and there are some dark stretches. But I decided I'm gonna like reach out to a friend and text them. Say, hey, it's Fisher Post going on tomorrow night, you wanna come? Well, when you're texting in the dark and your head's in the phone, you look like a drunk. So I realized I was making myself kind of look like an easy target. Staggering down the road in the dark by myself. So I let the friend know, I'm a little spooked. She said, you want to ride? She said, it's way out of town. No, that's okay. I'll just let you know when I get home. And I should probably stop texting. Well, there's a lot of trucks go by real fast, cars go by real fast. Yes, 25 miles an hour, all the way to the end of the street. So I get out of town, there's not so many pedestrians, cars, it's quiet, I can hear them coming. This one car comes along and it just slows down. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Someone help me out later. I'm supposed to look at the car or I'm just supposed to look at it? I'm supposed to eyeball them or just ignore them and they're not there? Then they're like really slow. Their windows are dark, I can't see. Then they go past me and pull over. But a friend's house is right here, so I sneak in between her cars, right? And I'm keeping an eye on them. I think. Trying to keep an eye on them. Did they get out? Are they still in the car? You know, it's a little tough for me to see that and tell if they're there. But then I hear someone behind me in the garage at my friend's house, rustling around, and I'm thinking, should I knock on the door? Am I that spooked that I should knock on the door? Or am I just too embarrassed to knock on the door? And, you know, is there any real danger here? Okay, is it the danger of being embarrassed or is it the creepy car? So I decide, the creepy car is not a threat. Jesus has promised to be with me, and he's not going to forsake me. He has proved himself to be faithful all this time. We are going to do this. Yay, so I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Go down the dark road, Mission Road, at night. I will fear no evil, no spooky car. You are with me. Your rod and your staff are going to comfort me and whoop that person. So, hey, creepy car, I got this. And I walk by, giving them the eye. Make it home, and I text my friend. But it was a great night. So, let's see if I can do this. Seven poets reading, six friends are laughing, five warm friendly hugs. 4 miles walking, 3 friends crying, 2 legs that moved, and a spooky car that came a creeping by.
is Michelle Leisure. She was born in Alamogordo, I think I said that right, New Mexico, but grew up in the Dust Bowl known as Lubbock, Texas. She moved to Kodiak almost 10 years ago on a leap of faith and the promise that many of us non-coasties were made. Let's test the water for a year and see how it goes. She's still here. Since moving to the Emerald Isle with her sweet and amazing daughters, her family grew 2.5 years ago with the addition of her beautiful baby boy. Michelle is a middle school language arts and theater teacher with a penchant for playing board games, the good kind. If you don't know what that means, ask her after the show. Please welcome Michelle.
All right, so I think the most spooked that I've ever been is when I found out I was going to be a parent for the first time. So let me start by first saying that I was trying to find a great hook because, as Elmi said, I'm a language arts teacher, and when I teach my kids to write, I tell them to find a good hook at the beginning. So my hook for you guys is that I read this meme that said, parenting isn't about being perfect. It's about being real. And let me tell you, there is nothing more real than a mom bee. You don't know what a mom bee is. Then you haven't been around anybody who is parenting an infant. Because a mom bee is somebody who doesn't get sleep, has to wake up every time they hear a creak because they never know what's happening in the house. Somebody's creeping in. The baby's waking up, the baby's suffocating, what's happening, I can't sleep at night. That's mommy. And so you basically are working and doing everything with no sleep at all. So, when I first became a mom, it was probably not the most usual way about becoming a mother. I was going to Lubbock, where I grew up. At the time, I lived in Dallas, Fort Worth. And I was going to Lubbock for a wedding. It was in October of 1999. And some friends were getting married. And when I got there, my husband at the time and I, we found out that his sister was pregnant. And in his family, his sister wasn't going to be able to take care of the baby, and they weren't going to be able to keep the baby in the family, and so the baby was going to have to be given up for adoption outside of the family. And at this point in time, I had been married for a couple of years, and we felt pretty stable, and we started kind of thinking about what it would be like to have this baby. So on a 6-hour drive from Lubbock back to Fort Worth after the wedding, we didn't speak at all. No words at all. Until we hit Weatherford, which is about 30 minutes outside of where we were living at the time. And at the exact same moment, we said, we need to adopt that baby. And for the rest of the drive home, we talked about what are we going to do, because this baby is going to be born in a month. This wedding took place on October the 22nd of 1999, and my daughter was born on November 27th, 1999. So in the span of a month, we went through a nightmare roller coaster of emotions and social service visits and doctor's visits and physicals and ups and downs with attorneys and trying to find people and to get papers signed. And the day that she was born, we were on our way back home. Again, we had gone to Lubbock for Thanksgiving, thinking that she was going to be born at that time because that was the due date. But of course, if you know my daughter, she kind of works at her own pace, and that's okay. And she decided, no! You know, I'm not coming out yet. So we were on our way driving home, and as soon as we got back home in Dallas, we got the phone call that my daughter had been born. So immediately turned around, and mommy was born. Because I was not sleeping. I was going back to Lubbock to pick up my daughter. When I got to see her for the first time in the hospital, she was a beautiful little baby girl, and she's got this dark hair, and just teeny tiny, and really quiet and wrapped in a blanket, and just she's like the cutest thing that I've ever seen in my life. And I know moms all say that, but she was born in my heart, so I didn't have 9 months to envision this beautiful baby that I was going to have. I had about 30 days of insanity to get ready for her, and so looking at her this moment of peace. And it was amazing. But then I got really scared. Because what if her birth mother decided not to give her up? What if all these things didn't happen and this baby that I've instantly bonded with doesn't go home with me? And so I'm panicking a little bit. And I realize it's gonna be okay. I just need to kind of breathe and everything's gonna be all right. And we sign all the papers. And the nurses do their last check and make sure she's doing all right. We have social services that come in and make sure that everybody's on the same page. And everything gets finalized. And I get to walk out of the hospital with my daughter. And that was amazing. But I hadn't quite accepted that I was a mom yet. At this point, I accepted that, okay, I have a little human. I can take care of this baby. I'm competent most of the time. I can deal with things, you know. I can clean up spit. I can change diapers. I can make sure that she gets food and take her to the doctor. But I didn't realize I was a mom until she had started going to a nanny because I didn't take any time off from work. Her dad at the time didn't take any time off from work, so she immediately ended up going to the nanny. And her nanny always wanted to have a baby and was really struggling to have a baby. They were having a really hard time, she and her husband. And they were really nice people, but there was always this little bit of question in the back of my mind. So I had gone to work this one particular day, and I worked for, well, maybe a nightmare for some of you all, but a collection agency at the time. And I would call people all day long, and so I'm really tired. And it's you know, getting late, and I'm like, oh, I've really got to go pick up Morgan. And so I get there, and Morgan is maybe 3 or 4 months old at this point. And I'm knocking on the door, and I'm waiting. And I'm like, wait a minute, why are they not answering the door? It's cold out, it's kind of dark, something feels weird in the air. So I knock again, and I'm panicking a little bit, and I'm pacing, and I'm like, why are they not answering the door? The apartment is not that big. I'm knocking on the door again, and now I'm full-blown freaking out. And this is pre-cell phones, people. So I had to get into my car and drive to the gas station and go to what's called a payphone and insert a quarter, which thank goodness I had. And I dialed up my daughter's dad's pager because, yeah, that's how we get pagers. And he saw the number on the pager, called me immediately, and he said, Michelle, it's Wednesday? And I was like, yeah, I already picked her up. So they didn't take my baby away, and that's what parenting as a mommy is like. That's the reals.
Next is Jordan Beard. Jordan Beard was born in Fort Smith, Arkansas. She came to Kodiak as a summer counselor with a Baptist mission, warning her parents that she probably wouldn't be coming back. That was almost 3 years ago now. So when she's not spreading the legend of the Husha Bear amongst her preschool classrooms at the mission or quizzing her after-school kids in trivia, she's at home doing homework since she just started graduate school this fall. She loves spending time shooting her bow, kayaking, and hiking and playing board games with friends.
I should totally be friends.
While she's easily scared, she has so much fun scaring and pranking other people, especially the kids that she teaches. So she figures it's just karma.
All right, I'm going to begin my story by giving a little shout out to my dad. He really wanted me to be prepared in life. So at the age of 5, he sat me down to explain the alarm system to our house. And it was a very serious matter. There was a family password, and I had to swear on my life I would never tell anyone that password. And I can't even tell you guys today. Take it to my grave. And so he sat me down and gave me a couple scenarios of what could possibly happen. A burglar might break in. I'm like, okay, I'm a little nervous. And then he wanted to give me another one. What would happen if it turned into a hostage situation. Yeah. So he said, this is what you do, Jordan. They come in and they want you to turn off the alarm. Go ahead, just turn it off. It's okay. And then what happens next is the alarm company calls. And if they make you answer the phone, this is what you do. They say, is everything okay? And you say, yes, everything's okay. It was a false alarm. And then they ask you the question, what's the password? And you lie. Any other word but the password, don't ever say the password. Yes, Dad. Right. And it was from that and all the other times he scared the living daylights out of me, including the time he put a live cricket down my shirt because I'm scared of bugs and he thought that would be funny. Didn't talk to him for 2 weeks after that. But, so all of that made me the girl who is easily spooked. So the first story I'm going to tell you is when I was at home alone for the first time for the whole weekend, had the whole house to myself. I was so excited. And I was going to have a nice weekend, to be quiet. And I decided I was going to work a double shift at 5 a.m. on Saturday. I was going to be responsible. And so I was going to go to bed early on Friday, got my dinner. I was just finished eating. And I had turned the alarm on yet. It's an important detail. And all of a sudden, in the other room, I hear, oh, what was that? Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. We're experiencing real life right now. And so I'm like, okay, what do I do? Training. Here we go. I haven't turned on the alarm yet. The alarm's on the same side of the house where I heard the noise. What do I do? I'm just going to make a run for it. Okay. And I run, come back, never run faster in my entire life. Get back, whip out my phone, call my dad, go, Dad, someone's breaking in the house. I heard a noise. And he says, well, go look. And I'm like, I can't walk toward the noise. Are you crazy? And he says, go look. And I'm like, oh, gosh, okay. But stay on the phone with you, okay? And I walk toward the noise. Same thing. I grabbed the yardstick for protection. It saved me, so you know. So I grabbed that guy, walking around with my yardstick. Dad went on the phone. Okay, I don't see anything, Dad. He's like, are any windows broken? No, no. Go look outside. Okay. There's nothing outside. Okay. So I look upstairs. There's nothing anywhere. By this time, my dad is over my fears, so he hangs up the phone, and then I have this idea in my head, well, there's someone in the attic. Because the attic in the basement's the most creepy place, so put on my brave pants and go look in the attic. Of course, there's nothing there. So I go to bed, alarm, I go to sleep about 3 a.m. My alarm goes off at 4 a.m. So didn't get much sleep that night. So walk into the kitchen, walking around the island, and then there on the floor, a clear ceiling tile had fell that night. I had been afraid of a ceiling tile. Great. My dad loved that story. So the next one happens when I was also home alone. Parents were at work. I had just gotten out of school. It's really bad weather that day. The tornado siren starts going off. And tornado sirens are normal. We could probably have a picnic in one, but my parents had trained me right. It's all about training people. And so I grab blankets and my phone and my dog. We go to the centermost room of the house, get in there, close the door, doing okay, call my dad, he doesn't answer. Call my mom, she doesn't answer. Okay, I do this. And then I hear, Aah! And I'm just terrified, and my dog starts barking. And then the back door sounds like it's being ripped off by a giant. My dog's just going crazy. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's actually a burglar. And the power's out, so there's no alarm system, people. I'm just like, what do I do? And then I hear,
Jordan.
Oh my God, the burglar knows my name. I call my dad. No, he doesn't answer. I call my mom. They're dead.
and that's the only way to get in the house is we keep all the other doors safely locked. And so I'm like, you know, I bet that was bad. So I go to the back door. It definitely looked like he tried to rip the door open. And I open the screen door just enough. Dad. It's storming outside. Can't hear anything. Dad! Still nothing. All right, okay. So I step out on the porch, I scream a couple more times. Can't hear, there's nothing. So I go right around to the gate, open it up just a little bit, and I'm like, Marcus Spear Jr.! And he comes barreling around the side of the house. Where have you been? I've been calling your name. You made me rip the door off that hinge. It's like, Dad, you just treat me too well.
Sidelining in the sticking of slimy, salted sea pictures.
I hope this story comes together. When I was in third grade, my mom remarried, and we moved from a small, unhaunted house in Chico, California, to a large, haunted house in Redding, California. My new stepfather was an attorney, and he had bought this house, a big, old house, right down the road on Court Street from the courthouse, and his own office kind of perched up on the hill there. And he installed his own three kids, and his new three stepkids, along with his new wife, and sort of a super dysfunctional Brady Bunch with ghosts sort of situation. And admittedly, I was probably the most dysfunctional of all. I was not the most popular person in our new family. Unlike my little brother, who was gregarious and friendly and easy to get along with, I was quiet, very quiet. And people who know me today might be surprised, but at that age, I didn't speak at all. I hadn't perfected the art, in fact. And I know that you know, you think you know quiet kids, and yeah, he's very quiet. No, you know. There are quiet kids and there are silent kids. I had perfected the art of holding myself into the corners of the room and never reacting to anything ever. I literally had nothing to say, ever. And for kids who perfect this, you always have a prop. You have to have a prop. It's kids with a basketball, you think, well, Jimmy's got his basketball, he's okay. You know, or the guy with his yo-yo, well, Tommy's always playing with his yo-yo, but, you know, he's all right, right? Or, you know, Billy's got his switch leg. For me, it was a book. You know, I always had a book. And I, as props go, I really recommend a book. I mean, you stick your face in a book and no one bothers you. You're busy, you're reading, right? And I would read anything. I would read shampoo bottles and tech books and stuff that I had no idea, like James Joyce. I had no idea what was going on there. And so I always had my face in the book. And so when we all moved in there and the strange thing started to happen, I was like suspect number one. My stepfather was sure that I was behind the whole thing. But after a couple of months, we all came to realize that we simply lived with ghosts. Some of the stuff was explainable. We had doors that would open and close. And it was a very old house. It was built in the 1880s, 1890s or so. In Redding, that was just when they put the railroad right down the valley. And all the gold miners came out of the hills and settled right there next to the river and the railroad. And it was a pretty big house, less than 3,000 square feet, with five rooms. And one of them was just this gigantic sort of entertainment room. And I always imagined a bunch of drunken cowboys, you know, trying to dance in this big room. And it was a big wood house that had this deck that went all the way around it. And the floors were this 2-inch oak flooring throughout the whole thing, which I now realize was amazing. And it went all the way out onto the deck, and Redding was so hot back then, and without any air conditioning, it must have been a great boon for them to have this giant deck that went all the way around the house. But for us, it was terrible, because, you know, and the windows would open and close by themselves, and, you know, they can explain that away because, you know, you have the window sashes and everything, and the doors would open and close by themselves, and you know, it's kind of old hardware, maybe that would happen, I don't know. And then there was the voices that came up from the basement. All that could sort of be explained away, but then there was the walker. The walker was the creepiest thing. Because every single one of us at some point woke up in the middle of the night without realizing why it was that you woke up. And you're laying there in bed thinking, what's going on? You realize that someone is walking around the deck. Literally walking around and around and around and around the house. And you think, well, this is okay. Someone's walking around the deck. I'm just going to go back to sleep. But after a while, you hear him going around and around. You think, oh, I'm going to look outside, see what this is. And you look out the window, and there's nobody there. And this got to be where everyone in the family heard it. And some nights, I remember getting up in the middle of the night and looking for the walker. And I looked around, and I saw my stepbrother. And he's over by the window. He's doing the same darn thing. He's waiting for the guy to come around so we can look through the window and see him. But we never did, because he wasn't there. And you could hear the footfalls very, very distinctly as he went around and around the step. You could hear him. It sounded like he was a big man, taking large strides, walking out with his boots. My brother and I would think about him. We sort of attached all these various things to him. Like, he seemed like he must be a big guy, probably in a shroud with a hat and big boots. And depending on our mood, he would have a hatchet or an axe. And we called him the man. We imagined the man walking around and around and around the house. And as scary as it was, we all just got used to it. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you realize that the man was walking around the house. He's like, well, yeah, he's not there. So, boom. Well, there were things that also happened in my own bedroom. As I said, I wasn't the most popular kid in the family. So they put me out in what it turned out were the servants' quarters, which was just a two rooms, sort of one on top of the other. And so I slept up there, and there were certain strange things that happened up there, too. My window that I was next to my bed would open and close, the sash wakes, but then the shutters would open, and they would bang, 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 bang. And then another thing that would happen was my record player. I had the suitcase record player that you used to be able to open up. And back then, records were amazing. I just discovered 45s back then at the Woolworths, and I it's too bad that the Woolworths aren't around anymore because they had everything. They had the Fish and the Rivals and the everything, and the 45 records. And I discovered all these 45s, and I thought, oh my God, what is this? And I put them on record player at home, and they played music. And I was picking them out at random, but I picked out one of my favorite was, "Does your bubblegum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight? Mother says don't chew it, do you swallow it in its pipe?" And I had this whole stack of 45s. It always started with that one, and they would go up and down. But they would start in the middle of the night. I would be up, I'd be sitting in my bed, and all of a sudden I heard this tick, tick. I'm like, "Does your bubblegum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight?" I get up and I put it off, and I put my 45s, put it back up. And then usually the window would open, and the shutters would start flapping. It was all very benign until the night of the big storm. We had this enormous storm, and up there we get these tremendous thunderstorms that come in, and they're just huge. I mean, the thunderstorm of thunderstorms. At the top of the valley in California, it's just amazing. The lightning crashes, the thunder booms, and we were having a tremendous storm, and my shutters kept opening, and bang, 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 bang. And I put them, shut the shutters, shut my window, and I'd wake up again, and the window would be open, the shutters would be banging again. And the latch was so good. I mean, I'd latch the latch and click into place so firmly. And I'd wake up again, and it would be open again. Bang, 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 bang. The wind was howling, and the lightning was flashing. And at one point, I woke up in the middle of the night, and my shutters were banging, and the door, the window was open, and I just stuck my head out the window, and I said, "Just leave me alone! Why don't you just leave me alone?" I'm shouting out the window because they won't let me sleep. And I'm just shouting out the window. And then I lay down on my bed and I shut the shutters again and I can hear the walker going around the deck. And I'm like, can you hear him stepping? And he comes up to the door, which would open by itself, but the door opened. And then I could hear footsteps stepping into my room downstairs, which was very unusual. Like, oh my God, he's coming into my room. And I can hear him coming up the stairs. He's like, I'm like, oh my God, it's the man. It's the man. He's coming to get me. I yelled at him. He's coming. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. He's been around this whole time. He's been lined up until now. He's going to. And so I'm sitting there crouched in my bed. I'm under the window. I felt the covers pulled up. And I could go. And a duck went by. I'm not sure what to expect. I can hear the steps coming, the footsteps coming up the steps ominously, and I see this huge, dark figure who looks exactly the way we describe the man. He's shrouded, he has this giant cape coming down, he's dark, he's enormous, and he comes up the stairway, and he looks at me and he says,
"What's wrong with you?" "I don't know, Mr. Ghost, I don't know." And then he steps a little brother, and I realize it's my stepfather. He's wearing his bathrobe. And he's like, "What's wrong with you?" I've been yelling out the window, apparently, and the wind went right down to their bedroom. I'm like, "Leave me alone, leave me alone." I woke him up and I'm like, "Oh my God, what is with that kid?" So he steps forward, and I realize he's just enraged. I mean, at this point, I've just driven him to the point of just, and he's like, no! And I'm not sure what he's going to do. Is he going to yell at me? Is he going to kill me? I don't know. And I'm still kind of afraid that he's not the man. Is he a man? I'm not sure. And then, I swear, the lightning flashes behind him, and he lights him up, and then we hear the thunder rumbles. And he has something terrible to say to me, but we have to wait until the thunder's done. And the thunder's over, and it's this moment of silence, and we go through this clicking, this weird click, and I don't know what it is, and I'm so afraid, and I hear all of a sudden this like, "Does your organ music make a run like quicker than that? Mother says, don't do it, do you swallow it?" It's like, and I it just kind of took all the wind out of his sails. Like, he looked over at the thing, and like, and he just popped down the stairs. And I put the 45s back up, and went back to bed.
Our next storyteller is Catherine Hollis Buchanan. And Catherine was born in St. Petersburg, Florida, and came to Kodiak in 2009 to work for the hospital. Now she's a professor at Kodiak College. She enjoys geocaching and playing with her dog, Lolly. Please welcome Catherine.
So, imagine this, October 25th, 2012. I'm scheduled for surgery in Anchorage on Monday, this is Friday, and I have conned, so to speak, a mother in town to allow me to escort her 17-year-old daughter to Anchorage so she can care for me and escort me home after my surgery. We love to geocache. And so Friday night, October 25th, again, 2012, we decide, I'm getting nervous about the surgery, but it's not till Monday, so we're going to have lots of fun geocaching over the weekend. That's the night, if you don't know, that Chasing Mavericks was released. My favorite movie in the whole world for the rest of my life. We went and saw Chasing Mavericks, and I, of course, fell in love again because Gerard Butler is my heartthrob. Phantom of the Opera. So I want to go see it again Saturday and Sunday again. Maybe even Monday if I feel up to it. But my friend, who's again 17, has never seen a 3D movie in her life. She came from a farm in New York and came to Kodiak. We didn't have 3D yet at the time. So I'm like, okay, so Saturday night, we decide to go to Chasing Mavericks again, and then Sunday night we go see Hotel Transylvania 3D. That's not the spooky part. So after the movie, which is like 9:30, 10 o'clock, we decide we're going to do more geocaching. We have geocached the heck out of Anchorage. If you've never done it, does anybody not know what geocaching is?
No.
It's like a high-tech scavenger hunt, let's put it that way. And so you take your phone and you look for stuff, and that's all you do, really. There's nothing else to it. But it's kind of fun, and sometimes it's really hard to find these things. So. We've geocached all day for 2 days. The week before that, I was up there for my church and bought a Jeep, an orange Jeep. Orange is my favorite color. And I left it there, and the intent was to teach Kaylin, my friend, to drive a stick the next weekend while we're geocaching. So she can drive the thing after, drive me to my appointment on Monday, and then we can have somebody put it on a ferry to come back here. But she chickens out. She doesn't want to drive in Anchorage. She doesn't want to learn to drive a stick in Anchorage. So I'm driving all over, which is fine. So Sunday night, I'm still really nervous. So we go see Hotel Transylvania. And afterwards, we decide to geocache some more, just a little bit more right before my surgery. So it's like 12:30 at night in the morning. And it's October 27th now. So it's a little chilly and a little bit snowy in Anchorage. Not too bad yet, but we are looking at our phones and going down this trail in a residential area, looking for this geocache, and can't find it. And then all of a sudden I hear something, and I'm like, first of all, we both get really, really mad because it's cold out and we haven't gone for hours since probably before the movie, and we probably drank gallons of pop before the movie. So we both have to pee, and we're like, and I hear something, I'm like, so we stand still, and all of a sudden this bicycle comes. It's got lights on the tire, so it doesn't freak us out, and we're like, that's pretty funny. But in geocaching, you're not supposed to let anybody see you find the geocache, right? So we're trying to be quiet and hide. Well, then all of a sudden she goes, what is that smell? And I'm like, oh my God. On Thursday, the night before we left, I was watching TV with my husband about how you can always smell a bear before you see it. Right? So I'm like, just find the geocache, get out of here. So, and we're laughing and trying to find the geocache and freezing. And so we're looking all over the place, and my phone says we're right there. And all of a sudden, I look straight ahead, and right here, there's a birdhouse. Well, I know that's the geocache, because the birdhouses are supposed to be up there, not down here. And I open it, and everything falls out. So that makes us laugh even worse. And we're trying to, I'm trying to hurry up and get out of there, because I'm pretty sure there's a bear right around us. And that's the spooky part. We are laughing, and we're on the ground. I'm trying to pick up stuff and sign the log. And not pee my pants, literally. And I'm like, shh, can somebody stay here? And we're in the middle of a residential area at almost 1 o'clock. And again, her mother is going to kill me, literally, if we die. Because we're out at 1 o'clock in the morning in bear territory. And she's 17, and I was supposed to be responsible and adult and take care of her. So she can take care of me. I'm not going to make it to my surgery tomorrow, I'm pretty sure. Which is just fine with me too. Anyway, we put all the stuff back in the geocache, shut the door, we signed the log. I have no idea if we picked everything up or not, but we make our way back to the trail and get out of the little area that we're in and get back to the hotel. We made it, didn't die. I made it to my surgery, my Jeep made it to Kodiak. And I guess the funny part of that is, like, every little thing that we heard, that we saw, that we smelled, brought back something. Like, I don't know why I watched that stupid show with my husband the night before we left about bears smelling. And I was sure that that smell was a bear, but when we were leaving, we found out there's this stinky, that nasty little pond right across on the other side of the little trail where the bike freaked us out. And so there was nothing really scary about it in the end, but it was hilarious. And that's my story.
Mahim Tore was born and raised in Banyagara, Mali, West Africa. He speaks 5 African languages and French, and he's learning English. He's worked as a communications specialist and social worker for a variety of humanitarian projects in Mali for more than 30 years. This is his second visit to Kodiak. His first visit in 2012 was the first time he'd ever traveled outside of Africa. He spent the past 5 years saving his money in order to come back and see his Kodiak friends. Heather Priest met Mahim in 1993 while volunteering on a nutrition project in Mali. Despite the years and the distance separating them, Heather and Mahim have maintained a unique friendship. Although their life experiences are remarkably different, they share a common mindset and often find themselves finishing each other's sentences.
I did a galley table story in 2014, which I think was season 2. I swore I'd never do one again. Here I am. But it's because I get to share Mahim with you guys tonight, which is my deepest pleasure.
There were also fewer people in season two that you supposed to get to. So the theme for tonight got me thinking about what it means to feel spooked, which of course means different things to different people.
You have to hold the mic.
So the theme, the theme for tonight got me thinking about what it feels like, what it means to feel spooked, which of course means different things to different people. And when I knew that my friend Naheem was going to be visiting during Galley Tables, I thought this is perfect because we are a really good example of the fact that what spooks one person does not faze another. I, like Jordan, can get spooked very easily by many insignificant things. Like if I have to walk up a flight of stairs that has no backs, my legs turn to jelly, because of course I can very easily slip through this that space and back the stairs. And if I'm folding laundry at home and one of my daughters comes around the corner and says, "Hey mom," I pretty much jump really in the air. Naheem, on the other hand, seems to me to be absolutely unspookable. This man has lived through things that most of us cannot even imagine. In March of 2012, just 6 months before his first visit to Kodiak, which, as was said in the introduction, was the first time he had ever flown outside of Africa, there was a coup in Mali. So the government was overthrown and shut down. And police officers, healthcare workers, and teachers fled many areas, and rebels and extremists took over the northern third of the country. Naheem, being a government aid worker, went months without a salary, but he kept working. He traveled by donkey cart and by foot into rebel-controlled areas to bring food, medicine, and supplies to people who were cut off. He rescued a sick person by hiding them on the bottom of a canoe and paddling them down a mucky river to get out of the rebel zone. So here I am in Kodiak, wondering if Naheem and his family are okay, and wondering if he'd even get to use the mileage ticket that I had saved years to get him. He would send me occasional emails when he could find an internet connection, and he'd always reassure me that he was fine, that he still wanted to come and visit Kodiak despite everything that was going on in his country, and that sometime, somehow, he would get himself to the capital city to apply for a US visitor's visa, just after the next supply run into the rebel zone. So I kept checking the embassy website because, of course, the U.S. embassy was closed and they had evacuated all non-essential personnel. Now, as you might imagine, trying to get a visitor's visa from a country like Naheem's to the United States is no small feat at the best of times, let alone a few months after a coup. You can't just send in your passport and send in your money and get a visa. So I wrote a letter to the embassy, vouching for Naheem, that I'd known him for more than 20 years, that he's a good guy, and that I would support him during his visit in Kodiak. And I must have checked that embassy website 20 times a day, chewed my fingernails, while Naheem kept doing supply runs and rescuing people out of the rebel zone. The embassy finally reopened, and Naheem sent me a very excited message that he got an interview date with a U.S. immigration officer for 2 days after his scheduled departure date. I get on the phone with Delta Airlines. After what seemed like years of listening to elevator music, a very pleasant woman came on the phone and said, "How can I help you today?" I immediately started sobbing. She said, "Oh, honey, how can I help you? What's the matter?" I told her the entire story. After a brief pause, she said, "Can you hold, please? I'll be right back." After another few years of listening to elevator music, she came back on the line, and she said, "I managed to rebook your friend's ticket by 1 week later. Does that work for you? This is a mileage ticket I bought 9 months previously." Naheem goes to his interview at the U.S. Embassy. The immigration officer looks at his plane ticket. He looks at my letter of support. And then he looks at Naheem, and he asks him, "Do you even know where Kodiak, Alaska is?" This is a completely true story. This is what Naheem told me after the interview. Because I'm like, "Okay, so I'm in the interview today. Is he going to get the visa?" You know? The officer Mahim replied, so he asked him if he even knew where Kodiak, Alaska is. Mahim replied, all I know is that my friend Heather lives in Kodiak, and wherever she lives, that's where I'm going to visit her. That ended the interview. The officer stamped Mahim's passport, not just with a 6-month visitor visa, but a 5-year multiple entry. So, Mahim's plane ticket went from Bamako, which is the capital of Mali, to Paris, to Minneapolis, to Anchorage, and then on ERA to Kodiak. Remember, he had never flown outside of Africa. He had no cell phone. He had no credit card. He had no American money. He did not speak English. Me, being a protective mother hen, I sent him a message written in English that he could print out and take with him, show it to people in case he needed help along the way. And it said something like, "My name is Mahim. I am going to Alaska to visit my grandfather. Please help me." So, of course, due to a flight delay, he misses his connection in Minneapolis.
Oh no.
Did he need my note? Was he spooked? Oh no. This man speaks 6 languages and has a degree in communications. So by the time he brought someone's cell phone to call me, he had already rebooked himself on the next flight. When I met him at the airport, I asked him, "Did you feel nervous at all flying out of Africa for the first time?" And he looked at me with a very puzzled expression and said, "Why would I be afraid to get on a plane?" And I'm wondering to myself, does anything spook this man? But we did find something 5 years ago that gave him a little bit of a fright. We went over to my friend's house in the flats to have a cup of tea. We went down into her living room to have a seat, and Mahim chose to sit in the big old wooden rocking chair. The instant he sat down, he cries out in alarm. And my friend and I look over at him, his arms and legs are flailing, his eyes are open up wide, and his tea is spilt all over. He thought we were experiencing an earthquake. Because he didn't know what a rocking chair was, he'd never sat in one. So we finally found something that spooked me. That's my story. To wrap up the evening, though, Mahim wrote a few words that he would like to say. He is learning English, and so he would like to now say what he has to say to the people of Kodiak.
Hello to all. I'm very happy to be here with you tonight. I found myself here for a second visit to Kodiak. I love Alaska, and I especially love the people of Alaska, Kodiak, because you seem to share solidarity with me. I very much appreciate this. A community is, in fact, defined by its humanity and how its people share their spirit. No one should have to be alone in the world. Your community understands this. I am so happy to know what I have lasting friendship in Kodiak, despite that I live so far away. My Kodiak friends are always thinking of my family, my country, and me. I thank you all very much for this. Thank you.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller. Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life.